Listening Library presents The Speaker, Book 2 of Sea of Ink and Gold by Tracy Chi, read for you by Kimai Guest. The Dreams. Archer was dreaming again, and in the dreams he had no name. He didn't remember when he'd lost it, but now the men called him boy or bootlicker or nothing at all. He stood in a circle of stones, large and pale as skulls, while men and women jeered at him from outside the ring, their faces turned into hideous masks by torchlight. When he shifted, bits of gravel dug into the bottoms of his bare feet.
"This your new candidate, Hatchet?"
a man sneered. He had black, deep-set eyes and sallow skin.
"Got him in Jocoxa a couple months back," Hatchet answered. "Been training him up."
Hatchet, stout build, ruddy skin, always picking at half-healed scabs. The nameless boy touched his neck, fingers grazing the scars at his throat. Hatchet had burned him. The sallow man smiled, his teeth sharp and small like a ferret's.
"Argo's already put down 4 underfed whelps like this one."
Turning, the boy with no name found Argo standing on the other side of the ring, the light flickering over 4 raised burns on his right arm. Through the short coils of his beard, he wore a slack-jawed smile. The crowd began clapping and whooping, a signal maybe. Argo strode toward the nameless boy, who tried to step sideways, but he stumbled.
"Watch it," Hatchet snapped.
The boy with no name was turning, bewildered, trying to find Hatchet's watery eyes in the crowd when Argo attacked. His fists were everywhere, raining on the nameless boy's face and head and chest. It got hard to breathe, hard to see. The blows came faster, heavier, like hail. The boy with no name doubled over, caught a knee in the face. The ground rose up to meet him. Dimly, he heard Hatchet shouting,
"Get up! Get up, you little—"
But he did not get up. Argo flipped him onto his back, straddled his chest, and raised a hand to strike. In that moment, the nameless boy understood. This was the end. He was going to die. He would cease to breathe, cease to be, cease to hurt. It would be easy. But he didn't want to die. And knowing that, knowing he wanted to live, however hard it was, however much it hurt, something opened up inside him, something hidden and ugly and powerful. Argo slowed. Everything slowed. As if the seconds were stretching into minutes, the minutes into hours, the boy without a name could see where the fight had begun and every hit he'd taken since, all unfurling before him in perfect detail. He could see bruises and newly healed bones beneath Argo's skin, could sense pressure points in his joints like buds of pain waiting to blossom. The fist came down, but the nameless boy deflected it into the dirt. He trapped Argo's leg with his own and rolled, pinning his opponent beneath him.
"That's right, boy! Fight back!" Hatchet shouted.
The boy could have struck, but he leapt to his feet and looked around instead. He could see everything. He knew which torches would be easiest to wrench from the ground and how long it would take to reach them. He knew which of the stones lining the ring would make the best weapons. He counted revolvers and hidden knives in the crowd, found loose patches of dirt where the footing would be weakest. He saw it all. As Argo stood, the nameless boy hit him in the face. The flesh crumpled. He hit Argo again and again, quick and hard, where it would hurt most, where it would do the most damage. It was easy. Natural, like breathing. Argo's kneecap popped,
Ligaments snapped. The boy without a name struck him in the collarbone. He could almost see the splinters of bone spring away from each other under the skin. Argo was crying. He tried to crawl toward the edge of the circle, but his arm and leg were no longer working. His limbs were covered in dirt. The crowd called for blood. Kneeling, the nameless boy picked up a rock studded with crags. It was almost over now. He could see the end. It was very close. Argo's eyes were wide with fright. His gums were bloody as he pleaded for his life. But the boy with no name did not listen. Living meant killing. He saw that now. He knew what he had to do. He brought the rock down onto Argo's face. He felt the impact, the sudden warping of bone and flesh and beard. There was no more begging. He raised the rock again. Chapter 1 Quartz and Tiger's Eye. Cephea glanced down at Archer, where he lay in the hidden pocket among the rocks with the rest of their belongings. He stirred once, tossing the blanket from his chest, and went still again. During the 2 hours since moonrise, he'd already slept and woken so many times, slept and woken, continually pulled under the surface of his dreams, until he thrust himself into consciousness again, gasping for air. Even now, he didn't seem to be resting. Brow creased, fingers twitching, lips drawn back in a snarl or a silent cry. She wanted to go to him, to smooth his forehead and uncurl his fists. But since their escape, he'd been different, distant. Their encounter with the guard had changed him. It had changed how they were together. It had changed everything. Perched on a granite boulder, Cephea pulled her blanket closer about her shoulders. She would have preferred her hammock to this niche between the boulders, but her hammock had been left on the floor of Tannen's office with most of her supplies. And Nin, the ant she'd sworn to rescue, the ant she'd failed, a small body beneath a bearskin cloak. Cephea shuddered, remembering what had happened next. The gleam of the knife, the way Tannen's skin split beneath the blade. Her second kill. The guard would make Cephea pay dearly for that if they found her. Now two of their directors had been killed by her family. As she did every few minutes, she narrowed her eyes on the woods, feeling for that special sense she'd shared with her mother, and her father, too. She reached for her magic. It was always there, always moving, like a powerful ocean beneath a crust of ice. For the world was more than what you could see, or hear, or touch. If you had the gift for it, the world was illuminated, every object swimming in its own history, every moment accessible if only you knew how to look for it. She blinked, and her vision came alive with swirling golden currents, millions of tiny bright specks shifting with the wind, the upward inching of the trees, the sigh of decaying matter settling gently into the dirt. In the valley below, not 2 miles from their camp, the remote alpine city of Kaskara lay along the Olivine River. This close, Cephea could see lamps like golden beads spangling the streets and lumber yards, barges tugging lightly at their moorings, smoke spiraling up from the pointed rooftops. But nothing disturbed the peace. Cephea blinked again, and her vision, what the guard called the sight, faded. She and Archer were safe for now. The guard had not come for them yet. But they would, just like they had come for her parents, Lon and Maria. At the thought of them, her heart curled up like a leaf in frost. Sometimes she found it difficult to believe they'd...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?